All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back on the Indie Horror Talk podcast here. Today we're going to be on the episode featuring Tony or TJ, however you like to go by. And we got the regular sauce here joining us on today.
Hi.
Hello.
So, how have you been?
Recently, pretty good. I just finished my new Spring Trap cosplay, which has been really fun. Before getting back into some larger builds for the end of the year. So, getting all that done was a big relief, considering it was, kind of riding off the coattails of PAX this past year. So I got a good little break before I started on Spring Trap, but I'm glad to get another small little break before I started my next couple of projects.
I did get to see I did get to see the spring trap that you did on Twitter, so.
Oh yeah, I forgot to post pictures of it. Yeah, I'm actually in the process of editing the reveal video right now. Like this, I this morning I've been editing that, and I can probably show you guys in a couple hours after this is done being recorded. But
Sure.
yeah, I'm really happy with the full suit.
I think I saw it through Red Panda on Instagram. I think Red Panda retweeted that, or not retweeted it, but showed it on their story, just the progress you were at, because you had posted it on Instagram. I was like, Jesus Christ, what was the time frame between you starting it and already being done? It was insane to me.
I think I so PAX was done on September, like I think I got home between like September 4th and 6th. I took a good couple of weeks to rest, and then I got started on Spring Trap like officially, I think around September between the 22nd and 25th. And I'd say it got done on November 3rd. So that's about like a month and a half, maybe. About a month and a half, and I'd say maybe like 1,000, maybe a little bit upwards of 1,000 man hours.
That's insane. Gee, wow. God.
You're pretty dedicated to your crafts, I see.
I mean, it's a hobby, but also at this point it's become my career. So I've definitely I've learned to, kind of really when I want to, I can really get into the work,
Yeah. Flow state. How do
So
you stop yourself from getting burnt out? Out of curiosity.
that's a good question. I don't really know. I did feel a little bit of a burnout after PAX this past year. It was a lot of work, very last minute. Not very last minute, but in terms of, putting stuff together, the puppet and Jackie came together in, about like 2 to 3 weeks. So like that was a lot, and I did feel a little bit burnt out after that. But I think after the PAX event itself and, giving myself a little bit of rest, I managed to recover. So, really, I think it's just the way I personally avoid burnout is once I'm done with a big project that does leave me kind of burnt out, I will just rest for a couple of weeks. And, try to kind of refocus my current hyperfixation from FNAF into like Sonic or something and just, rest.
Fair play.
It's impressive how you just you just move on from one project to another, even if you get burnt out, like you still keep doing what you're doing.
I mean, it's just the name of the game, I guess, in this industry. You got to make stuff to, put food on the table. So it is. It's my job, and it the it, I kind of I've been learning how to separate, work from, my personal life. And I think that's also been, a big factor in, allowing me to kind of just consistently go from project to project.
Yeah, no, I so yeah, because like you gotta keep the audience busy. You gotta keep like giving them updates. It's like when you're playing a game, like devs gotta keep updating their games. You gotta keep giving them something.
Yeah, I will say I have kind of I haven't been as active as I would have liked to have been. I'm trying to get back into it with Springtrap and stuff and the next couple of builds. But with my first year and a half at Steel Wool, it was just, getting into the work completely. And for the first 3 months I was working at Steel Wool, I kept it secret. So like, I really couldn't talk about much at all, for like that almost entire first year. So I'm trying to get back into it now, but it is, that is definitely like, you know, the name of the game and trying to keep up with the audience and stuff. But also, you know, I try to make sure that that isn't always at the top of my mind, because I think if it was, I'd go nuts. You know, I try to keep a lot of my work, you know, as passion driven as possible and less about, you know, making content and stuff. So that's kind of the hard part, finding complete enjoyment in the craft still, you know, while also trying to make content, which, you know, makes it, I'd say the content makes it more work. And then, you know, the rest of it, actually the making of and, you know, performing in cosplay is more the passion part of it. So it is definitely like a game of balancing, you know, those two things.
I like that thought process. I like it a lot, because you are establishing, you know, a separation between work and fun and hobby and just general time management. Where is that sweet spot in your life that just you enjoy, where it's everything kind of melts together as one? Because I'm assuming finishing a project and then having the world kind of react to it in awe, as opposed to, where does your own self-satisfaction come from? Does it come from, you know, how people will react to it? Does it come from embodying the character and learning how to get into a character? Or is it just overall, you know, the fact that it's finished and you could put that as a, you know, another stamp in your portfolio that you could just continue on and improve later on if you ever determine it to?
You know, it's it's funny you say that, because I think those first two things you brought up are definitely like the biggest parts for me. Playing the characters is a gigantic, you know, gigantic part of the fun for me. And, you know, playing the character, bringing it to life, and then seeing the reaction. You know, the people seeing the character is, you know, my biggest thing. I don't want people to just see it as a cosplay. You know, I really want it to feel like just the character come to life. I mean, I think that's why I really wanted to rebuild Springtrap, because Springtrap has been one of the characters where, like, I've really enjoyed playing Springtrap when I built him a couple of years ago. And I always have. I built my first one back in, like, 2019. And that was really fun to kind of figure the character out then. And, you know, it's been, what, 5 years of just kind of learning, you know, from costume to costume. And I'm very happy to be doing Springtrap again for that reason. And people also love Springtrap. Like, Springtrap is my favorite, one of my favorite characters in FNAF. And, you know, a lot of people love that character. So it means a lot to me to be able to, you know, manifest that character into real life, you know, in a form that's recognizable, you know, in our world. And I do think that's where a lot of my satisfaction from each build comes from. But also, I really enjoy the process of actually building, you know, the process of building the things. For that year where I was just kind of silent working at Steel Wool, I was really just into, you know, kind of laying low and doing stuff secretly for a while. And, you know, I'm still doing that. You know, with Steel Wool stuff, but now I'm kind of balancing between content creation and doing this stuff officially. I've got, like, I think right now I have 5 projects for 5 different clients all going on at the same time. Some of the ones haven't, like, started building, you know, some of them are just concept work. So it is, I think now I've especially kind of found a good sweet spot between, like, you know, really finding the enjoyment in the production of the stuff in secret, and, you know, just kind of savoring that process. And then also being able to, you know, make content from the builds I'm doing currently. And, you know, doing that, you know, as I please.
Wow. You gave me a really profound answer. I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting question. I do tend to talk a lot. I apologize.
No worries.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful, because you're in the wonderful situation of being an engineer and an artist, which, you know, sometimes for some reason those are separate professions altogether, but you meld it so well. And I love the fact that in your post you can actually tell that you have an itch that you're scratching every time you find a new solution for a new cosplay. because watching the evolution chart of your cosplays, of where they started and where they're at and probably where they're going to be in a couple of years, it's kind of insane. And I don't know how your brain processes the change that drastically happens between projects, because I don't know how you go about learning these new skills, whether it's from your peers and compatriots that you learn a specific trick that you never thought of and you implement it, to overall how it just goes about you just chilling from not doing any project and kind of just thinking out of nowhere, I've just come to mind that could happen at any time. Like, oh, wait, I can do this.
Again, I think the questions you're asking are very in-depth, and I think you've kind of, I'd say you understand, you know, at least somewhat where my brain kind of works on that, because yeah, it is, you know, it is a combination of those two things where it is, you know, I'll go to work somewhere or help on a project and learn some stuff there. And then, you know, a lot of it is also just kind of screwing around with stuff and figuring out like, oh, you know, will this mechanism work? Will that work? You know, specifically with like the, you know, with my new spring trap, I took a lot of inspiration from like a little bit from the Yellow Rabbit from the first movie, and like specifically in the details of the eyelids and the ears being solid material, and then, you know, the kind of fleece, and then also the burning around the edges like the Yellow Rabbit has in the first movie. You know, it is just kind of melding together stuff I see, and also just playing around with new methods to build stuff. I think next, I really want to do I've been wanting to do Bowser for years, Bowser from the Mario movie, or Smash Bros. I mean, his Smash Bros. Design is also really good. And Metal Sonic. I think Metal Sonic might be something I do next year, because that one would be super fun. I've had this idea for like a turning one of those like small box fans into the turbine in his chest. So, you know, it is a lot of just kind of being creative with, you know, material application as well, you know, and kind of looking around and finding out like, you know, if you can just take something apart opposed to, you know, completely designing something from scratch. And it is a combination between those two things a lot.
I never thought of that, because I keep forgetting you didn't just start off with, you know, FNAF cosplays. It makes me realize how that's going to translate to other styles of characters. Bowser is an interesting concept. I never even thought of that, because most of the times whenever I think of cosplays along that line, I think of Universal or Disney for how they revolutionized that area for costume design.
Yeah, so, and it's, well, it's, sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no worries.
It's funny you say that, because that is a big reason I got into doing animatronics in my suits, because like, you know, Disney's out here putting, you know, animatronic eyes and very simple features in their costumes. And, you know, when I first got into cosplay, I was like, you know, they're doing that. That can't be that hard to do if it's, you know, possible. So that's when I started learning animatronics and really getting into that. So that is kind of, you know, I think Disney and Universal are very state of the art in their technology. So like whenever they accomplish something new, it's just like, you know, that's possible now. There's, you know, in a couple of years, that technology will be able to be used at a hobby level. And even if it isn't, you know, it's still achievable through some means that can be done at a hobby level. So like, you know, especially Disney is a gigantic inspiration for, you know, the puppetry and animatronic parts of my costumes I try to do. I mean, with Bowser specifically, what I've been trying to plot out is like, you know, using a small fog machine in his mouth to replicate the fire effects, and then, you know, the glowing eyes he has in the movie whenever he gets pissed, and then animatronic eyes, all, you know, all the kind of stuff you've seen on my FNAF stuff, but applied to a character that is more organic. And then with Metal Sonic, you know, same deal, where it is another robot character, but, you know, he's a lot more sleek compared to you know, FNAF characters, but I still think that's pretty close to like Glamrock Freddy or Roxy or something, in terms of like, you know, material.
Oh my, that's gonna be awesome when you do start those projects, mainly because I want to see how you deal with the malleable face features that Bowser probably has, because when you probably get to that point, you'll probably figure it out by then, because a lot of people have been able to do cosplays that have quite the expressive way of going about things.
Have you seen the film, or not the film, the show Dinosaurs from
Jim Henson? Yes.
Yeah, that's the facial expressions on like Earl Sinclair are kind of like my inspiration for what I want to do with Bowser. You know, the gigantic like opening mouth and stuff. I've seen that head in person. It's huge. So that's what I'm kind of, you know, basing my ideas for Bowser off of.
Well, if you make it happen, it's going to look sweet, because those characters in that show were just so expressive, especially for the time. And technology has definitely gotten better since then. So you utilizing what we have in today's modern equation, you could probably incorporate Blender shape keys, like what Disney was doing with, what was it, their recent Tiana ride.
Yeah, I think they did it with a Beauty and the Beast ride not too long ago too. Yeah, you know, it's with their stuff, it's interesting. You know, it's all pre-programmed. And with Dinosaurs, it's all done via radio control. You know, it takes actual puppeteers to learn those movements and stuff. But you know, I've leaned more into that aspect myself now, where it is all, you know, live puppeteerable. With our builds for PAX, all the characters, Roxy, Classic Freddy, and Glamrock Freddy, have puppeteers around the booth that are just kind of hidden. Sometimes they're not very well hidden because we don't, you know, coordinate that much beforehand. But like, you know, having puppeteers that can be there by the character to like, you know, really bring them to life, because you can only do so much from inside the costume, you know, especially if you have like moving hands or whatever. But also like, there's only so much you can do with a couple of different buttons you can like, you know, press to activate like a certain face shape. And that's why I really enjoy like live puppeteering with radio control stuff. And like all my recent characters for both Steel and, you know, Springtrap and stuff, those have all been like live puppeteerable suits.
Which is wonderful. We always have a live performance. Let me just cut myself off and switch over to Raul.
Hey, thank you, TJ. So yeah, no, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us, by the way, Sauce.
Yeah, of course. I like talking.
yeah. No, and that's why you're here, right? So, what inspired you to get into cosplaying? And you know, what made you decide on like the characters you wanted to bring to life, and how did you do it?
So, when I was a wee boy, when I was like fucking 8 years old. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss. when I was like 8 years old, My dad took me to a local Comic Con out in San Antonio, Texas. The prospect of dressing up as a character I really liked. I want to dress up as Luigi really bad. I loved Halloween. I loved dressing up as Luigi for a reason I couldn't really figure out at the time. I mean, now I figured it out. It's just that I really enjoy playing the character and, you know, kind of embodying that character for a bit. I mean, it's basically just role playing, but in real life, but, you know, with these, you know, crazy suits. And I found a lot of enjoyment in that. So I dressed up as Luigi for this convention. We went to a local thrift store, and I managed to find an old Hoover. I think it was a Hoover vacuum. It was a vacuum that looked almost practically identical to Luigi's Poltergust 3000 from Luigi's Mansion 1. So I spray painted it myself. You know, put duct tape around it, glued, cut off the back of one of my old backpacks, and duct taped it to the back of it, and I made Luigi's Poltergust, and I took that to me with the Luigi suit I had. I just bought like a Spirit Halloween or something the Halloween previously. We went, and you know, it was a lot to kind of, you know, for people to be like, oh my God, Luigi, and you know, people to really not address me by just, you know, my name or anything, but you know, seeing me as Luigi as a character. And you know, I had a lot of fun just acting like Luigi too, as a, you know, as a 9 year old. So, you know, I think that's kind of like the canon event that led me down this path. And I kind of say, you know, that was the main thing. And then from there was, you know, getting into other things. I you know, once FNAF came out, that was kind of a game changer for me, because I was like, I want to make suits like that. And you know, I had some friends in the furry community, and you know, they were amazing, and you know, taught me kind of the basics, and I went from there. But yeah, that's kind of, I think that's a good answer for how I kind of started.
And this is when you were at a very young age too, yeah?
Yeah, around 8 or 9.
Was when the Luigi event happened. Oh, that's crazy, man. And look at you now.
That's weird. I'm pretty fast.
Look at you now. You essentially just picked a character select screen on Brawl, got Luigi, and said, you know what, my whole personality is going to be just making characters come to life. How'd that get? Ain't that crazy, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's literally a dream come true, and you know, getting to work in the industry now especially is amazing. I mean, working in doing this stuff in industry is a lot different than doing it in hobby. But it is, you know, it's still fun nonetheless.
Oh, definitely. And I think I could speak for us all here saying that a lot of film definitely impacted a lot of our decisions in life. For me, it was Jurassic Park, the original one. Just everything in that movie blew me away, and it kind of set me on a path of like appreciating film and appreciating just the fact that we as humans can just create things with the fingertips and with like group effort. Like I assume we all here have a film that really just turned on a switch in our brain when it came to looking at the industry as a whole, as a separate thing. Because like, for instance, Walking with Dinosaurs it literally established a bunch of people who created props and animatronics to come together and make a show that they could bring on the road, because they had nothing to do between like filming sessions. Like, that's insane.
I have a favorite film.
What?
I have a favorite film.
What's your favorite film?
Iron Giant.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. I grew up with that one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to do an Iron Giant cosplay for a long, long time, but I just kind of forgot about it. Maybe one
no
day.
No way.
That'd be insane. A little speaker inside saying Superman over and over.
Yo,
it literally just comes down to, you know, money. Like if I have the money to do it, I'm going to do it. I just, you know, right now with the current state of, you know, the industry and everything, it's been hard to juggle, you know, doing passion projects like that and then doing official projects. And then it's like, okay, do I do something that, you know, is going to like kind of help me and do well online? So I can, you know, hopefully make, you know, some of the build budget back, and then make something I really want to make. I mean, that's kind of what I'm doing with Springtrap right now. I mean, Springtrap is obviously one of my favorite characters of all time, but I'm hoping, you know, if Springtrap does well, then I'd be able to, do Shadow the Hedgehog next. I'm in the pre-production phases of that build, so that'll be fun, hopefully.
Really? Yeah. Hopefully it does go well, because like you said, I noticed that you bring up a good point. There are things that will do well online, and then there's things that are obviously for hobby, but you're still very passionate about, which I could see where you juggle that. But I could also see why you're so passionate about making sure things do well so you can pursue, you know, what you actually want to do just for yourself. Not, I know every cosplay is for yourself and it's intended to be something you enjoy. But it also makes me realize that it comes down to the same thing. It was a hobby, but now it's something you're actively gaining from. But at the same time, you still want to find that enjoyment of just doing something different, which I believe everybody in an artistic field wants to do. And a lot of them are hindered and hunkered down because, you know, of what the current state of, like you said, the industry is. So I feel like what you're trying to accomplish, and at the age you're doing it, I definitely believe you'll have a lot of room, especially when you get older, to kind of just go wild with it, especially if you play your cards right and you poke at specific things that I believe you just soar and become, you know, very much a staple in that industry.
Hopefully. I'd like to find success. So, you know, I mean, right now it is just kind of like, you know, living from a project to project. So, you know, it is, and I moved on my own. I've been living in Vegas for the past year with my partner out here, and like, you know, having to become an adult has definitely, like, I think it's impacted the rate that I'm able to make stuff. So, you know, right now I'm trying to kind of get back into it and seeing where what it takes to still be able to make passion projects and like stuff I really enjoy, you know, over just having to go completely into industry work to like, you know, keep myself afloat. So again, we'll see. If Springtrap does well, then, you know, everything's going to go well and everything's going to be fine. But you know, we'll see. I'm really happy with the build, so hopefully everybody likes it.
Bet you they will. Bet you it's going to, you know, exceed your expectations in terms of the response people will get for it.
Hey, I love it.
Well, for all I've seen, I've loved it. It's just insane how you're able to just make it look like it just hopped out of the game. I feel like that's been a great progress to see. Let me also cut myself off again because I need to. I also like to talk a lot, as you can tell, so it's kind of like we're going to be stuck in a loop of just...
No worries.
But a good question that Safar wrote up that I really need to ask was, what has been the most challenging costume you've created, and what was the obstacles you did encounter during that process? And overall, if you were to go back at it with your new skill set that you have, how much would that just amplify it from it being a problem to it now being a super easy solution?
I have two answers to that. I have one from a long time ago, and then I have a recent one. Which one do you want to hear first? Or, you know, which either or?
Old one first. I'm curious.
Okay. Yeah, the one I did that kind of, you know, let me try to get into cosplay at least somewhat professionally was when I was 15 years old, I built Twisted Freddy from the Twisted Ones, the FNAF book. And that build, it was really fun to build, and I learned a lot. You know, I'd never built something that big before. And like, it was a lot of just, you know, my dad would be like, "Hey Trey, I found this, you know," it was the main harness system for his head, since his head was huge, was a, we modified a bass drum, holder for like band equipment. And basically I just secured a big rod to it and then a rod to the head, so it kind of swivels back and forth. And that build was a lot of just, you know, creatively trying to find a lot of creative application, to make it, you know, look good and not cost a ton. I'm pretty sure that build in total costed like $900, which is a lot. But you know, considering what I think it was worth it. And my dad was the one who paid for it all, 'cause he was really happy to see me making stuff. My dad has a background in graphic design. So he was always very supportive of my hobbies. And considering that was really the only thing I did, you know, he was always willing to help support it until I was able to support it on my own a couple years later. But yeah, Twisted Freddy was a big one. And the thing about that build is it looked great, but it weighed around like 75 to 80 pounds. Oh. I was 15 years old, so across my entire body, that was a lot.
Are you talking about the one that you had on your old website when you were taking commissions at the time? Because
yes.
It was huge when I saw that.
Yeah, that one is huge. And it was my first real like experiment with animatronic eyes and LEDs and stuff. And it even had we had a speaker in it, and it would have a voice modulator through my phone. So I talked through it, and then it'd go through a big speaker, and it would sync the sound with the servo that would control the mouth. It was a really crazy and ambitious build, and I'd love to do another one of those, you know, one of these days, like a more accurate Twisted Freddy. But yeah, no, that build was, it weighed a ton. It was a pain to wear. It won me a couple of awards, which was awesome. It also, like, you know, I didn't understand the concept of, like, you know, going around and going to other cosplay contests around the state and, like, you know, winning a bunch was kind of frowned upon in the cosplay community. Nobody really told me. And that was my first costume that, like, I really took around. And I took it to, like, two cons, won two awards. And I did, like, another convention out in San Antonio. I'm going into tangents now. I'll stop talking.
No, keep going.
Okay. Well, okay. Just to finish that story quick. I went to that third con and didn't win anything, which was fine. And I was fine with that. But like, the people that were hosting that cosplay contest and convention, one of their podcasts, these were like full grown adults, and they were like just talking about how happy they were that I didn't win. And I was like, it made me feel really bad as, you know, a 15-year-old, and I didn't understand. And that kind of, yeah, I think I retired the suit shortly after that. But like, yeah, that suit has a lot of memories with me. I mean, I think that suit had one of the longest lifespans of any of the costumes I've made up to now. And I'd love to remake it with, you know, all the tools I've got at my disposal now, since, you know, it's, I know a lot of more like lightweight materials and different methods of creating it. I think that one would be really fun to do again at some point. But yeah, I'd say that one was probably the most difficult, old one.
It's 15 too. I'm going to say I've seen most like full grown engineers struggle to make something that's that complex, especially when they're jerry rigging stuff. So it's insane that you were doing it at 15. Now that just makes me wonder, what was the newest one that you struggled with that you were about to bring up? Because it perplexes me.
Yeah, I also want to know.
So it was Roxy for PAX this year.
Really?
Yeah, that build had a lot of hurdles. I'm not going to go into like too, not going to go too in depth, because a lot of it was like, you know, the personal stuff happened with the actor, and you know, she had to, I mean, the actor is my partner. She, we ended up getting her to do it because, you know, we didn't cast anybody else in time, and, you know, she had previous experience in helping me out with puppeteering and stuff. So we figured she'd be really great at it, and she blew it out of the park at PAX. I mean, she brought the character to life perfectly. But like the suit itself, you know, it all came together super last minute. And I'm definitely going to ask if I can go back and, you know, do some big refurbishments on it to make her look even better. I actually saw that costume recently. I went to the Sewell office to pick up Classic Freddy. So like that one was definitely the hardest for a lot of reasons. It was mostly just the timing of everything. But it was also just, you know, a lot of unlucky stuff happened with that suit. Like, you know, on the trip to PAX, you know, all the things got like, you know, jumbled around, and her eyes were supposed to move, like her eyes themselves, her eyelids ended up moving in the final. But her eye mechanism melted in the shipping. And then, you know, while I was painting her, the paint I bought was old, I guess. So the clear coat was coming out a little bit yellowish, and like, you know, the paint itself was bubbling up in a really weird way. And also it was like, it was our hottest, the record, hottest it's ever been in Vegas, while she was being built. So, you know, it was 120 degrees outside every day, and I'd be outside painting her.
Holy shit.
And it was a lot. And I'm happy with the way it came out, considering it, you know, the build process was about, you know, I think in total, you know, she was in the concept stages for a good couple of months, but like the build itself came together in about 2 months. Which, again, to give you a perspective, Glamrock Freddy came together in about 7. So, you know, that's, you know, almost 3 times less the amount of production time Glamrock Freddy had. And Roxy had a lot of more new features, like the hair, you know, being able to flow around and stuff. It was a lot, but in the end, I'm happy with it, but I do want to go back and, you know, do some modifications to it.
I'd like to also add on to that. So the thing is that I actually like what you did with the hands, like how Roxy's hands move and all that, because I was looking at the videos on PAX and all that.
Glamrock already has that too.
Oh, he does, right, when he's holding the mic?
Well, when he's holding the mic, but his other hand is free, so he can kind of grab.
You know, it'd be cool, like the mic lights up, or like if you like have his like his right arm, just like have it go to his mouth and stuff, and just have like the mic turned on or something, like he's like actually in on stage or something.
I mean, the mic itself was just based on the game version, so I didn't think to add any lights, but that's a really good idea. And you know, maybe there'll be a build in the future that we can do something like that with, because I think that would be really fun. Yeah,
you you mentioned heat, and that actually is really relevant to what I recently had to do with props. I live in a desert, and like Vegas, we got up to 115. A lot of adhesives and just in general, wiring and everything, there's a lot of problems when heat starts to get a little too much, especially for cosplays, depending on the material you're using, especially for fiberglass stuff that I usually have to deal with. It was, oh my God, the circuitry and everything was so screwed, even with small amount of copper or silver. It's like, there are so many errors that could go wrong, especially when it hits that temperature. So I'm shocked that a lot more stuff didn't go wrong with that cosplay, especially knowing that it was in 120 heat, like just in a box or packed.
Yeah, I mean that, and also the fact that, you know, when she was in the process of being shipped over, I was kind of doing finishing touches on her, and I was in the process of going back and forth between LA and Vegas to do some stuff with the Henson Creature Shop. During one of my weeks over there, I guess the weekend before I left, I forgot to turn on the AC in the house. So when we got back, the house was 110 degrees. So that meant in the nighttime. So that meant that the inside of the house where everything was got up to like, you know, 100, 115, 120. And luckily, we had no damage then. But the damage did happen, you know, so at some point between, you know, PAX and, you know, her leaving my workshop. The heat's been nuts. I'm glad it's getting colder out here in Vegas now.
Insulation is key, especially if you're shipping cosplays across very hot environments. It's crazy. Heat resistant appliances, especially for cosplay, is something I feel like people really need to look into a lot more, especially since heat is drastically becoming worse each year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Zafar.
Yep.
Let's hear what you gotta say, my brother.
All right. So out of all the cosplays that you've done, like with all the ones that you've made over time, which character do you enjoy the most of cosplaying?
Probably Springtrap. I really like doing that, the whole zombie thing. But you know, the way I play Springtrap is it's like he's not completely a zombie. There's still semblance of human thought and human, you know, function in there. But you know, there's also the fact that every movement he make is pain, it makes us painful. So, you know, portraying that through the costume is always really fun. I think on video, it especially comes out really, really freaky looking. I wish I could do an Afton voice, but I can't for the life of me. You know, the most I do is just mumbles and groans. And I think it works. I'm a fan of when the horror antagonist in Five Nights stay silent. I think it kind of adds to the horror of it. So that's kind of my approach with doing Springtrap. And he's 100% my favorite.
The concept of a Frankenstein creature stuck in a suit is very much just very iconic in itself. Like, look at what FNAF's at right now, currently in the modern age. It's like the fact that it jumped in such drastic popularity, and then you have a character like that that's so iconic that a kid could point at its silhouette and be like, "That's Springtrap. That's insane." Like, think about where we all came from when that game first came out. It was just like, "Oh, we were all talking about it at lunch table, theorizing like theories with our friends," and now it's like, well, now it's sitting among with the giants like Jason Voorhees, Leatherface, you know, Ghostface, like all these iconic horror icons. It's kind of insane how far it's come, and you're getting to embody those characters on a unofficial and official scale. So must be a mind boggle, right?
I mean, I love doing it unofficially. Like, I have just as much fun doing it officially. But, you know, getting to play and, you know, make like official mascot costumes for FNAF is literally a dream come true. And you know, I'm a huge fan of, you know, creature acting and stuff. So whenever I get the opportunity to, I'm always a big fan of doing that.
Have you ever considered working with voice actors for pre-recorded lines for suits? Because
I have. I think. Funny you say that. Kellen and I sometimes, whenever we'll break out Glamrock Freddy at the same con, he'll do live voice acting with the suit, and I have a speaker in the thing that'll just project his voice. So he'll kind of just fade off into the background and let Freddy talk, but it'll be him talking live.
But Vanessa, I am a material girl.
And Tina Kelly and I do that. I'm really hoping we can do it with Classic Freddy eventually, considering that's like, he voices him in Funko Fusion. But, you know, I know that's a, that character technically still doesn't really have official talking voice. So, you know, I can hope one day that Kel will be able to voice Classic Freddy so we can do that, you know, together. But, you know, we'll see.
I mean, Kellen's been hanging off recently, especially with him doing a voice role in Planet of the Apes. That was insane.
Oh, dude, so, he's Kellen. Kellen's, I think, my favorite voice actor of all time. He was already my favorite before I became friends with him. And now that we're friends, it's a little bit awkward because it is like I'm a big fan of him. But also, he's, you know, he's a cool dude.
Yeah. You had the Markiplier and Ethan moment where you became friends with somebody that you looked up to. That's insane.
Exactly.
Because it's insane that he's just, he's a voice actor, but he's literally just one of the homies. If you look at him in retrospect, he's just
that's the thing. Everybody's just a guy. Like everybody's just, you know, a person. And, I think it's funny too. Kellen's a person that kind of taught me that, you know, when I was still young, like Kellen and I had a moment where, am I allowed to tell a funny story about Kellen? And
Okay. Really up to you, unless he's in here with burning ears.
Yeah, so I think back shortly after Sister Location came out, a little bit after Sister Location came out, Kellen had a YouTube channel and didn't really post much on it. And I didn't know that that wasn't him. And he posted a picture of his dog, walking his dog. And I commented on my account. And I was like, you're not Kellen. Delete this account. You know, stop lying that you're not Kellen. And he responds and he's like, I'm Kellen. And I was like, prove it. And he's like, okay, what's your Twitter? And then I give him my Twitter and I get a DM from him that same day. And he's like, hey man, I'm real. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I was like, dude, you're so cool. And he was like, I'm just a dude, man. And, you know, he was the guy that kind of like, you know, I think he taught me really good, you know, understanding that, you know, even people that, you know, work in the industry are still normal people you can just talk to. And, you know, I think holding people to super high, like kind of unreachable standards is, it's scary, you know, for everybody, for you know, people that, you know, are in the industry, especially.
I just love how you just like immediately just tell a dude, like in this conversation, you're just like, you're not the real Kellen Goff. And then bro just says, here I am, bro. I'm just a guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it went.
Yeah,
especially his appearances on Think Tank was it Think Tank?
You said Think Tank.
I'm going crazy. No, it's because I know he's on a Ben 10 team.
I think it's Think Tank.
No way. Think Tank.
It's Ink Tank, isn't it?
Ink Tank. Ink
Tank. Yes.
I love that. I just love how he's very open about his hobbies. Because, like you said, you don't need to hold people to high regards. You treat people like people, and the next thing you know, they're your buddies because you're treating them with the common courtesy that is required.
Oh, yeah.
Which I respect that, you know? You went through that actual natural evolution of looking at your idols and then talking with them, and now you're conducting business with them while also just chilling out with them. That's just a great thing overall. And I think it really puts in perspective that regardless of your background, of where you come from, you could end up in a place you didn't expect, and you could be doing things you genuinely didn't think you could be doing. It's a good retrospect for people because everybody has their own like issues they have to deal with in life. But you know, it's about it's about what you make of it, you know, how mm-hmm. that affects you and how that turns you out at the end of the day. And I think for you, hearing the story of you being inspired to just to want to make an outfit, specifically Luigi, and now you're over here with the aspirations of doing costumes with like Bowser, who's very much organic and very expressive and iconic. It's insane, but it's also, it just shows how far one person can go just based off of a small step. Luigi, and now you want to talk about making Bowser. It's full circle, you know?
I mean, the thing is, I think anyone can do it. Like, it is hard to figure out like motivation and stuff, but like, I think literally anybody can, you know, learn to make amazing stuff. It's just a matter of like, you know, really having the passion for it. But it is, especially nowadays, it's very accessible.
There is this one person I did see on Twitter. I don't know if you know who they are. Weathered Creations. They're doing similar work that you do.
Oh yeah, I saw that dude at PAX.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, and I saw their Withered Bonnie cosplay, and I saw that they did Chica as well, and Foxy, I think, as well. I think they did the whole entirety of them, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you may know somebody by the name of like the Red Panda's Workshop. Red Panda.
Yes, I do. That guy was one of the people that like first inspired me. Like I remember he was selling stuff on Etsy a long, long time ago, and I was like, man, I want to buy some of that. And I never did, but you know, gigantic inspiration to me.
They were talking about you when I was conducting business with them because I couldn't get in contact with you because I wanted to work with you at one point, but I had to take a step back and talk to them. But they mentioned you, and I was like, this, it shows how very close-knit the cosplay community is, because everybody talked to somebody at one point and everybody just kind of branches off to their own thing. But it's interesting how you go up to them and now you're among everybody else just casually making these things out of essentially materials that you could come by. It's just, it's so fun, you know, seeing connections and seeing the branch timeline of where everybody was at certain points. There was a question that never got answered earlier, and I think that's mainly because we were just talking a lot, and it was back to the film industry, specifically what inspired you in terms of films, because there is a pipeline in our child brain of stuff we absolutely will watch on repeat no matter what, even as an adult, to how we look at it now as adults, like in retrospect, the message and just overall the film.
Honestly, movies weren't something I was interested in. Like that wasn't what sparked my interest. It was just, I honestly think Luigi's Mansion 1 was the one that was like, that game was what really made me think like, wow, I want that. I want that vacuum. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess Ghostbusters a little bit, the original Ghostbusters kind of helped with that, but I only saw Ghostbusters after I was into Luigi's Mansion.
So video games mainly, and specifically Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah, I think that's like my favorite video game series of all time.
I remember early day YouTube. That was like all that was posted next to Amnesia and like horror Let's Plays.
Yeah, I guess Smosh, it was pretty popular.
It was. I think Smosh did a playthrough with like the Luigi's Mansion like mini game that was available for, I forgot what it was. I think it was on the Wii.
Or the Wii U. I know they had a Luigi's Mansion Wii U minigame for that weird game it had to, like the starter game.
Well, I was going to ask you both, so since we're on the topic of Nintendo as well, so what are y'all's favorite Nintendo character?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like simple answer is Luigi. I'm between Luigi, Bowser, and Falful from Bowser's Inside Story. Or Falful, yeah, Falful from Bowser's Inside Story. That one's, I think that iteration is my favorite version of that character.
What about you, Tony?
I think for me it's Funky Kong.
That's a good choice.
He's such a vibe. You can't tell me otherwise. He's just chill. He looks like the type of guy you could just sit with and have a conversation with, and he'll just happen to know how to fix your car.
Yeah, he would, actually. I feel like that's a really good description for him.
He's funky, bro. What can I say? He's a funky monkey, man. I love him. It's just great. What can I say? Oh, my goodness.
I like Ash Ketchum.
Is he a Nintendo?
I think he's considered, yeah.
Oh, my God, he is. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he is technically a Nintendo, but yeah.
I forget how big Pokemon is, that I forget it's still associated with Nintendo. That's just how big that community is. You forget about it sometimes.
You know, it's funny. Ash Ketchum is actually retired now. They retired him.
Oh, they put him on the shelf?
Yeah, he's no longer the protagonist, the main character anymore. Yeah, they got rid of him.
He preceded me for a long time, so by the time I catch up.
Bro never became a Pokemon master.
Well, he did, technically. If you...
No, I'm just saying, like, it would be so funny. Like, bro, like, just doing all these journeys and just catching all this Pokemon and everything. And just
for Red to do it in one movie.
Like, bro, like, it's sad, though. It's sad that he's not going to be the main character no more.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, all good things must come to an end, you know? Just be happy that it happened.
Are you quoting Dr. Seuss?
No, I'm just quoting whatever came to my mind at that moment, which was, I don't know where it came from.
I feel like that is a pretty universal quote.
It came from the heart. Yeah.
No, I'm going to be quoting Sun Tzu, The Art of War, soon in this podcast.
Bruh. Bro, ain't no way.
All right. Sus.
Yes.
Can you walk us through your approach to designing and building costumes, the specific method and routine you follow? But in genuinely, like, when you build a costume and when you're making a character, what is, like, your signature? What is your mark? What is something that you continuously do with every cosplay that just happens to be kind of like a tick, in a sense, that you just do it? You have to do it in every cosplay. Just your trademark, essentially.
Well, I really like to try to integrate, you know, puppeteering and animatronics and this stuff, but I don't know if I found my exact mark on, you know, all my projects. I mean, all my Stuwol builds have, like, you know, a stamp I put onto them on the inside that nobody really sees, but it's just, you know, the regular Sauce Productions logo. But, like, in terms of, like, build marks, I don't know. I haven't really with every build, it's different. But, like, I guess no matter what the build, my approach is always, like, you know, the character needs to show through before anything else. And, like, you know, people just, you know, maybe after looking at it for a second, they realize it's a cosplay, but I always want it to just be, they see the character first and foremost, and it is just that character, you know, in our universe. You know, whether it be, like, adapting their design to fit, you know, like, you know, realism in our universe, like with, you know, with Springtrap, that would be like adding joints, or with, you know, Glamrock Freddy, you know, leaning into, like, almost like Disney type movements with, you know, his movement, his movement style and the way I portray him. You know, it's stuff like that where it's just figuring out how to, what I can do to really make it feel like a part of our world, you know? And no matter what the build is, that's something that stays universal, you know, at the beginning of the process and through the end of the process when the character needs to actually perform. As for, you know, the actual build, it is literally just it. Like, it's just, you know, I'll be like, I want to build this character, you know. For example, let's say, you know, if I was approaching Metal Sonic, you know, I'd want to make sure that he looks exactly like the game. And it would, my first thing would be, you know, to do that, would it be a puppet, like a 3-foot-tall puppet, or would it be a full cosplay? Because if it was a full cosplay, it wouldn't be scale, but it would look good. And then, like, you know, looking at design stuff, it's like, how do I make the limbs look thin enough, at least, like, illusion wise, to still, you know, read as Metal Sonic? You know, I think I've come to the conclusion recently, especially that, you know, if I do a character like Metal Sonic, it's going to be a puppet because I want it to look exactly like that. But, like, yeah, I'd say, you know, between every build, that is the first thought of just, you know, what do I have to change? What do I have to redesign? What do I have to remove to make it, you know, feasibly work in our world, you know, first and foremost as the character. And then, you know, the build comes along and it's like, what's possible, what's not possible to make, like, you know, mechanics wise, you know, budget. And then from there, it's just whatever entails with the build process. A lot of the time I'll do a scale mock-up, and then, you know, 3D print a small maquette, or even just sculpt a small maquette that is relatively the scale I want, and then, you know, build it up from there, pattern it out, or, you know, whether it be like 3D printing, you know, full blown pieces. It is varied between each character and each build. But, you know, my biggest thing is making sure to stay on model, and figuring out, you know, what can be changed or screwed with, that also keeps it on model, but, you know, gives it some more, I guess, realism, just depending on whatever the design is.
So, like, with the way how you build your cosplays and stuff, so, like, it's not only just, like, accuracy, if I'm mistaken, correct me. So it's, like, also the accuracy and how you want to do them. It's, like, replicating, like, what's already originally there from before, you know?
Yeah, the biggest thing, like, I can for sure pinpoint in every part of the process is keeping the silhouette.
Yeah.
Like, if the silhouette looks good, I'm good to go. So, you know, again, when it comes down to characters that, you know, are more unrealistic proportions, it's like, how do you change that so the silhouette still does work? And then, you know, you make those edits, for realism within that silhouette, so it doesn't obstruct the readability of the character, you know?
Yeah. It's like, you're just trying to weigh those two out. You're trying to, like, make sure they blend together, mix well.
Exactly.
All right. Now, I got two questions in my mind that have been itching my brain now that I've fully recovered from my factory reboot. And one of them is pertaining to your mascot, or potentially just your character that you use on your websites, on your social media, just all that stuff. Like, what was the origin of that character? Because obviously we can trace it back to what it could be, what it could have been and what it used to be. But what does it represent now? And genuinely, like, how far in the lore of the character? Because I know everybody has, like, their own little story about their own characters they've made. But I know for a fact you probably have a little bit of a story behind that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I call him Sauce Bear just because it's easy. And obviously it's a reference to, like, you know, Fred Bear or, you know, Yogi Bear. What all these bear characters are, they have in common. So initially it was just a Funtime Freddy recolor, years and years and years ago. And then I, you know, tried to do it in a cartoony art style, and it just kind of evolved, into something that I was happy with that it still obviously is very reminiscent of FNAF, but I think art style wise, he can kind of stand on his own a little bit. With my art specifically, I grew up with this show, My Life is a Teenage Robot, and Sauce Bear specifically, he is very reminiscent of the designs from that show, and especially XJ9, the main character from that show. Was like, I think when I redesigned him to be how he currently is, I was like, I want to really lean into that and, like, make him look like a relative of a character from, like, the XJ lineup. That's most of his lore. And, you know, now it's just, you know, he just kind of serves as a mascot and the flesh puppet I talk through. Well, he's not made of flesh. He's supposed to be a robot of some sort. I was, you know, always thinking he'd be like fur and latex, or rubber. I'd like to do a costume of him one day, but, you know, we'll see. But yeah, no, he's just a guy. He's a guy that I kind of talk through. One of the things that is, like, more reminiscent of me, since I use him to talk through my YouTube videos and stuff, is one of his ears is a little bit floppy, and that came from the fact that one of my ears is messed up, and this same thing, you know, so same deal. The ear that's messed up on him is the ear that's messed up on me. So just small stuff like that to make him not, he's not supposed to be like a fursona or anything, but he is, you know, a reflection of me in some degree, you know.
Essentially, yeah. A funhouse mirror in a sense, you know.
Yeah, basically.
It's like,
you know, I respect that.
Oh, sorry for cutting you off, TJ.
No worries.
I was going to say that it reminds me of the remake for It chapter 2 and 1, and it was like, you know how Pennywise is a shape-shifting clown and all that based off the kids' fears? So I'm just thinking to myself, like, how you did your character for Sauce Bear is like some of the reflections you said that you had for the character based off you. It's like you're shape-shifting your own character into what you have.
Yeah, basically. And, you know, another part of him too is he's got like all these random little tools, and yeah, it's similar to how XJ9 from My Life as a Teenage Robot can like turn her weapons, her hands into like weapons and stuff. Same thing with Sauce Bear, except it's just tools, because that's what I do. Yeah, it's, you know, not really too deep, but just, you know, a fun reflection of, you know, kind of me, but mostly the work I do.
It's wonderful. You know, everybody has a outlet, and especially something to represent them in life. And it's good that you have something that people could recognize you by immediately just by looking at the character. Which it also segues to just general creation from me. It segues into this. Where, it just in general, what do you think of the fact that not only the accessibility of, you know, 3D printers, but the accessibility of Blender has contributed to the cosplay scene in a, as a whole? Because it's drastic from the years when I first saw when I first saw 3D printers rolling out to now they're everywhere, and next thing you know, cosplays can now become one to one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, groundbreaking that technology is now out there. And I know for a while, there was like a couple of years, people were like, well, 3D printing is cheating. And, you know, it's just a different tool to, you know, use. It's no different than, you know, foam fabrication or anything if you just do it right. So, like, it's, you know, it's another tool. And I think it makes it more, it makes creating more accessible for so many more people. And I think I'm so glad that that's available to everybody now. I mean, the printers I first got were some cheaper ones as well, and that's kind of what got me into it. And I've still got some of those same printers with me. I just don't use them as much. You know, now that I'm able to, well, with Steel, we were able to afford, you know, some more industrial equipment on their budget. So, you know, working from kind of like top of the line stuff now has been especially amazing. But the fact that those printers too are basically widely available to the public, I think it's a great thing, and I'm really glad that, you know, more people are feeling, you know, able to make stuff because this tech is now available. And I mean, same goes with Blender. I mean, Blender is not only for cosplay, but, you know, for the medium of animation and just, you know, sculpting and modeling, obviously revolutionary. And I use Blender myself. That's like my go-to platform between ZBrush and CAD. So like, yeah, no, it's definitely allowed me and many, many others to, you know, experiment and get better at the craft. You know, without much, you know, monetary resources.
Oh yeah, it really helps with production costs as well. I forgot about that. Just how easy some of the filaments are in terms of pricing if you just want to have a mock-up without having a full-blown fiberglass shell. That's crazy. Wait a minute, I forgot about that. The money-wise aspect of it is actually pretty cool that you brought that up. I didn't think about that. Huh.
Yeah, it's just made everything so much more accessible, and it's awesome to get to do stuff, you know, in this era especially. I mean, back in 2015 when I started getting into FNAF cosplay, they're just making FNAF stuff, trying to make FNAF stuff. I never would have pictured that, like, you know, now it's so easy to make something that looks so great. And you know, it just it's a really great tool. I think, you know, learning to still use foam and stuff wherever applicable is great. And I always suggest, you know, people learn to embrace foam fabrication as well. Mostly for the sake of, like, you know, you don't want to 3D print a full costume because it's going to cost a ton of money. It's going to take a lot of time, and it's going to be extremely uncomfortable, and you're not going to want to wear it for more than like 15 minutes at a time. And you won't be able to move. So like, you know, I always suggest, you know, learning the basics too with you know, making stuff with foam and this and that, but 3D printing is, it can be used as kind of a central point of many projects, I feel.
Oh yeah, especially with TPU filament, that's also a game changer for people making gloves.
Oh yeah.
Which is crazy. Because a lot of people, I believe, use 3D printing as a basis for their foam. Like, just as I need a visual reference or something to go off of just to get the foam right.
But oh yeah.
It's insane overall that it's so versatile, but yet it doesn't really diminish the other crafts. It just allows you to get more of an accurate representation of what you need for that material that you're working with. Because for the longest time, fiberglass was the go-to. It was, if you're using it, you're doing it right. Everything needs to be made out of this. And then foam was for more of the flexible area of where for the weight and for the distribution of your body. And it's now you have different filaments and materials being made for 3D printing that is essentially doing the same thing. And obviously the cost will always be a big factor to take into when you're doing a cosplay. If you have the budget to do it, absolutely do it. It's about the devil in the details, especially for cosplay. And what I've learned about enjoying this field is money is very hard to come by. Like you said, it's very hard.
Oh yeah.
But when you do have that ability to basically go out and enjoy what you're going to be making, especially with the materials you essentially gather together that will make it comfortable. I always like that people are now realizing I have the ability to make it look perfect, but I just want to see how I can make it comfortable now. Because back then cosplay was about making it perfect. Now it's about it could already be perfect, but how can it be comfortable? How can I optimize me wearing this as long as possible? Because
yeah, exactly.
a lot of the furry communities have now developed fans inside of their suits, which make it so much more comfortable. And then you got people developing, you know, soft padding inside to where you could essentially just do whatever you want inside the suit, be optimal, like flexibility. And seeing you now looking at it, what do you think you're prioritizing now that you know that you can get a character right in terms of now trying to make it as comfortable as possible for the wearer?
I mean, it is just straight up that, like, I'm, it's always like a matter of, you know, what has to be done to make something more pleasant to wear, you know, while also keeping all the design stuff you want to keep, you know, especially within the silhouette of the design and everything. A big thing I've gotten into, especially now, like Roxy was a big step in that direction, with figuring out like what can be done to the character design to make it work more practically. Roxy's torso especially is very, very, very thin. And we were initially going to get Isabel, our actor, to wear a corset underneath the plastic suit, but we were like, no, that would be insane to have to make someone do that for, you know, like an hour at a time, with such a big suit on already that's going to have, you know, animatronic stuff going on. I've incorporated fans into my builds before, but it is like a, you know, depends on the character and if we can fit it in. With Shadow, that's a character that, you know, I've already incorporated the fan and into the head and stuff. But like, yeah, with Roxy, the what we had to do is we had to kind of enlarge in the chest and pelvis a little bit and make her proportions a little bit more, you know, similar to an average, you know, human woman. Only because her game design is, you know, impossibly thin. And I didn't want to have to, you know, make anybody wear a corset to have to play this character.
Poor ribs. Ow.
Yeah, so... You know, what we ended up doing was, you know, it was a lot of just kind of playing with the proportions of the other parts around the belly, and then, you know, making the belly kind of a flare out at the bottom and top, and squeeze in a little bit at the middle to look right. And I think we achieved that very well. I'm very happy with the design we ended up going with for her.
I think you ended up making the fandom even more happy because it just made a lot of the artists in the community just go crazy at the idea of it. Just yeah, like, I mean, a slightly chubby Roxanne that just blew up.
Well, so many people love Roxanne too. So it's like, yeah, she should, I'm very glad that people, you know, liked the design that just had to be screwed with to make her more practical, because yeah, it is an unrealistic body type. And while it works for the character in the game, you know, they are very unrealistic character designs, and that's fun. That's their design. But, you know, kind of having to adapt it a little bit, you know, differently into a practical suit was very, very fun.
It was really fun to see. I wish I was there personally to witness it. I just haven't been able to get out and go to cons recently because more or less focusing on stuff I needed to do with work and such. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see you being able to really bring that great side out of the community, especially with you knowing you have to make a change with a character and it's going to affect how they looked, but people genuinely being so accepting of it to the point where it's like, oh, that's how they see the character now. You have that ability and you've done that and people love it. So I feel like it's really cool to see you make these designs and make them as close as possible and still augmenting them to where it's comfortable to wear and people just not even thinking twice about it because it's like, this character just looks so perfect. I don't care that it looks like that, because realistically, how else are you going to wear it? You're doing a great job in that regard. And I feel like you need more praise in that, because great job all around, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah. It's an honor to be able to build stuff, you know, officially, and being able to make stuff that the community likes, you know, being a part of the community myself, you know, it's always really cool that people enjoy my work, and I'm very glad to have the opportunity to be able to make stuff, you know, that represents the franchise, you know, outside of just community stuff.
Well, that's good. And actually, speaking of the community stuff, I want to know, like, is there something that stays in your mind to this day? Like any, you know, interaction that you've had with a fan or somebody you, you know, looked up to that really stuck with you and to this day still sticks with you, besides, you know, the Kellen Goff situation, because I know that really impacted you a little bit in terms of how you see things. But in terms of the fan side of things, is there any moment that stands out to you and sticks with you still and you think about every now and then?
Well, a big thing is, yeah, I see it pretty commonly now, is like, I've seen a lot of people try to replicate my old Springtrap costume. And that's just insane to me that people like that design enough to replicate it for themselves. You know, I've seen a couple of recent ones that are like, you know, I know we made a couple, like, you know, kind of build videos about it. So I guess that's where people are kind of getting the direct inspiration from, but like seeing people, you know, anybody, you know, like any of my stuff enough to, you know, like draw it, or I think Jackie, building Jackie was crazy, because that character is, you know, my build is the first people have seen of that character and still have seen of that character, because footage hasn't released from that game yet. So like, you know, having a thing I made be the, you know, being a source of inspiration for people is very surreal. You know, considering I, you know, I have cosplayers I look up to, and, you know, creators, other creators in the community, I'm like, this work is amazing. You know, I'm using this as, you know, a concept on my idea board, you know, for a build or mood board, you know, whenever I'm going through a design process, because, you know, there's so many great modelers and renderers and, you know, artists out there, and other cosplayers and just everything. So to be a person like that, to make stuff like that, you know, that people like enough to, you know, use as a source of inspiration is, I think about it all the time, and it still hasn't really like sunk in how crazy that is. And I'm not really able to put into words about, you know, like how thankful I am about that, just because it's, you know, it's nuts. It's just crazy that, you know, again, people like my work enough. Anyone likes my work enough to, you know, interact with the stuff I make, or even, you know, draw it or use it as direct inspiration for stuff they're building.
This is really nice.
It is really nice. It's comfortable. This feels nice. I'm going to pass things over to Raul now.
All right, it looks like I'm taking the reins here for the rest of the episode, I guess. All right. Thanks, TJ. Wow. What a this was a lot to go over tonight. I'm not going to lie. This was a lot for me, and especially for a cosplayer like you, man, and even TJ. Man, you guys got some great conversations going on here.
Yeah, I always appreciate, you know. Again, you know, anybody wanting to get more insight into the cosplay stuff, it's always really cool to be able to talk about it. Considering I don't really talk about it much online myself, other than, you know, the posting and revealing of builds.
Well, now you
it's always fun to talk about.
Now you got that opportunity now. Now you're here with us now. So with all the things that you've done over the years for your career that you've built over time, how's the cosplay community influenced your work? And is there anything memorable in the experiences you've had in the past, and any interactions with any of your fans and any other cosplayers you've ever met along the way?
It's tough because I feel like every time I go out with a costume or do something, there's always a moment that sticks with me. I don't know if I can pick one. man, let me think.
Take your time.
I don't know. I feel like that was, it's kind of, I feel like I kind of answered that a little bit with the past question, considering that was kind of what that, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, you know, any specific interaction, because they're
equal to you.
Yeah. It is a dream come true for people to even like the stuff I do. So it's, you know, anytime I get a compliment or anything, it's always, it's crazy to me. You know, I think, well, something recently that I guess I can just think of off the top of my head was, I wore Yellow Rabbit out to an arcade to film some stuff. And there were just so many, there was this little girl that kept running up to me, and she just kept hugging, Yellow Rabbit. And she was like, "You're my favorite." And her parents were there too. And like, I don't think her parents realized what Afton does, what kind of character he is. And I'm sure they looked it up afterwards and they're like, what are you watching? But like, you know, the fact that, you know, even little kids can look at any of my suit and suits and recognize the character is just, that's exactly what I want, you know, to do. Cause that's what people did for me, you know, growing up. So being able to do that for, you know, not just kids, but like literally anybody, you know, it's crazy to me. And I'm very, very grateful that I'm in a spot where people enjoy what I make at all.
So would you say that interaction you had with that little girl, was that something that made you feel better about yourself? Did it make you feel like you had, it's like that good feeling you had, right?
Yeah. I mean, any interaction where people sees a character and reads it just as a character is something that sticks with me. My memory is horrible, but there's too many to try to pinpoint just one, because they've all been, you know, so amazing, especially at PAX, you know, so many people, you know, at PAX too, you know, when people were honking Freddy's nose and, you know, kind of having reactions over that, that was very cool, you know. You know, as he was also puppeteering his face, so he'd, you know, make it like an angry face or a sad face whenever people would boop his nose. So, you know, seeing those reactions to the characters themselves is probably my favorite thing in the world.
I gotta give it to you, Sauce. I do respect you for treating your fans, treating every moment you had in your life over your years of doing cosplays, and I respect you for this. I respect you that you treat everyone equally. You don't pick favorites. You don't have, like, you don't put one over the other. And I just love, that's what I like about you so far. I love it.
He's starstruck. He doesn't know what to say.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm not good. Again, I'm not good with compliments. It's,
I got you there, didn't I? It's not good.
But I appreciate it greatly. It's awesome that, you know, you guys even considered to have me on your show. You know, it's really cool.
Yeah,
it's
man.
An honor to be able to talk to you, man. I've been, you know, a quiet admirer of your work for a bit, and it's insane to see, you know, how far you've progressed in such a short time, and it's never fancy myself in a call with you, much less having a deep conversation with you about the intricacies of this hobby that you've now turned into as a part-time job. It's insane, you know. You it's fun, and I like it because it gives me more of an insight as the people that I see behind social media. It's really good.
I mean, I'm just a guy. Yeah, I'm just a guy that makes stuff.
There's a guy, a dude who makes funny things, who likes to be a character.
A guy who brings smiles to people's faces.
Yeah. And a guy that goes popular for wearing a Hot Topic FNAF costume.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't get that suit from Hot Topic specifically. I found it at the Steel office, and they said I could just have it, so I took it. It's one of the original, I think 2016 Ruby's Foxy costumes. I don't have anything. I'm not gonna wear anything cool for Halloween, so I'm just gonna wear this, and I wore it.
Oh my god, you really did blow up on Twitter for that, and that was insane because I was like, I don't know. I think it's poetic. It's quite poetic. A guy able to make picture perfect characters wearing such a wonderful costume.
It's an amazing costume. I don't know why anybody would think otherwise, you know.
No one thought otherwise. What do you mean? Everybody was just complimenting you for it. Have you not seen
exactly.
It? You were the talk of the town. What do you mean? God, that's just perfect. It's just so, it's amazing. Oh God.
Yeah, I don't think anything will ever one up that costume.
I don't think there will be. I think there needs to be an inside joke where that guy keeps showing up in the background of your official posts.
Oh, it's going to happen. I mean, if there's any other, you know, PAX events or Steel Wool events, I will be wearing that.
You'll be wearing that on off days where you don't have to be wearing the main outfits. You'll just be wearing that when you're just casually strolling, looking at people's booths.
Well, I'm actually wearing it right now.
Oh, really? Prove it. You're on
it?
No, I'm good.
No way.
It's like I'm always wearing it now. This is actually my constant state of being.
It's actually constantly under my... I'm wearing it under any of my clothes.
Steve didn't tell me that these were retrofitted with actual spring lots, so it's kind of stuck to me. I've been stuck in the 2016 Foxy costume for 20 days. Get me out of here.
It's become part of me.
You are.
It's like my venom.
It's your carnage, man. What do you mean?
Yeah.
You're messed up. You're a creature, dude. God, it's my venom. Someone's got to make fan art of that now to regular sauce with the Foxy outfit. Oh, that'd be wonderful. They're ready to continue.
Huh? You want me to continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, I just love this little moment you guys have with each other here. It's really cute.
Hey, well now, buddy.
Hey, well, not like that, man. Not like that. Sauce is not what I meant. Hope you know that. But yeah, no. I gotta ask you this because so obviously I don't know if you were wearing any of the costumes at PAX this year. But or even before that for last year's PAX event for the Glamrock Freddy outfit and all that, but for this question I have to ask you, like, what has been your most rewarding experience at a convention or any event while wearing one of the costumes, if or the people who were wearing it at least?
I mean, well yeah, I play Classic Freddy. I don't think anyone else has played Classic Freddy in that costume or Glamrock. I play both of them. Roxy was the only one that had a different actor. So yeah, during PAX, I was just going between those two costumes all day for all those 4 days. And then same thing with the year previous. It's a hard question to answer because there are just so many just small moments that happen at those conventions, especially PAX, you know. I think the whole deal of just bringing Freddy to life and people seeing it as Freddy and interacting with Freddy and being able to, you know, be Freddy for them is just always so, so fun. You know, actually, I think one of the things that really did stick with me and I think about all the time is when they'd sing Happy Birthday every showing, you know, actually getting to perform as Freddie, you know, on a stage, because there hasn't been an official showtime, you know, that wasn't in Help Wanted One or in Security Breach. So, you know, getting to perform as an animatronic as Freddie, and, you know, and having people sing Happy Birthday to him was very cool. And, you know, just, you know, again, people seeing me as a character is very, very fun, and getting to bring the character to life for them is my favorite thing in the world. You know, classic and glam rock are kind of at the same level for me. But I think a lot of people love glam rock too, because people kind of see him as like, you know, a protective figure. So when people get to meet him in real life, it's always a very, to some people, it's a very emotional moment. And that is always, you know, cool to get to play, you know, for them. You get to bring the character to life for them, you know, because that is what I've always, you know, try to achieve with character performances.
Oh, wait, you just reminded me. We almost forgot the answer so far. Thanks to your opportunity with making cosplays, how does it feel knowing that you've gotten a chance to interact with some of the musicians on the side of the FNAF community?
Oh, like JT Music?
Yeah, being involved in production for music videos.
Oh yeah, no, it's nuts. I've been trying to convince JT Music to do another live action music video, and we're talking about it. I don't know if it's gonna happen, but yeah, like I listen to a lot of Five Nights at Freddy's music while I work. I mean, with whatever project I'm working on, I will listen to music that is either very reminiscent or, you know, is just straight up from it, just because it helps me properly get into the mindset. And, you know, I've listened to JT Music for so long, so getting to work with them was awesome. You know, getting to meet Living Tombstone at the FNAF press event for the movie last year was amazing. You know, it's just so cool. And you know, I've been working with there's this band called Neon Arcadia, and one of the main guys from that, Benny, he has a podcast called Press for Time, and I'm good friends with him, so I go on every once in a while. He's been doing some original compositions he did the original composition for the Yellow Rabbit suit reveal on my YouTube channel, and then he actually did an original piece for Springtrap, which will be getting revealed tomorrow on the 16th. So, you know, actually getting to work with musicians too for, you know, character reveals has been so cool. But like, no, it's been so cool. it's hard to use any other word than cool to describe it, because it is genuinely, you know, crazy to be in the opportunity to be able to work with people, you know, in different facets of the creative field.
Wonderful. You got to show us your buddy's work sometime. I would love to take a look at his podcast and potentially even just see what in general their portfolio looks like.
Oh yeah,
I already follow them on Twitter. I already know who they are. Press for Time, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I've been looking at their stuff, man. It's cool.
Yeah, they're really great. Very, very genuine people.
It seems that way, yeah. From how you talked about them as well, yeah. I'm just looking at them right now. This is actually cool. So, yeah, no. So, like, when it comes to, like, all this, and to all the people who's listening to this right now, by the time this episode's out for season two, what is, like, when it comes to you, what's the one advice that you would give to help your fan base, all like your audiences everywhere, just to help them achieve the best results when it comes to cosplaying?
You know, I feel like it's kind of a thing people say a lot, but just, you know, keep on trying. It's especially with cosplay, it's trial and error. Like, it took me years to figure out, like, you know, to get to a point where I'm happy with the work I'm outputting. And even now, sometimes there's stuff I'm not happy with. Not completely happy, but you know, it's a process of trial and error, and you know, just trying something new every time and giving yourself the opportunity to make mistakes and learn is very, very important. And you know, obviously having the patience through a build process, it'll take a while, is very important, but giving yourself the patience, you know, to make those mistakes and learn is a very, very important thing. And I think a lot of people, you know, will tend to give up after, you know, a couple of mishaps, but things are always going to screw up. It's just a big thing that nobody really talks about is like, no matter what, especially when it comes to cosplay or, you know, even production, something is always going to screw up. The thing that will make you really great at it is figuring out, you know, how you can fix those screw ups. And you know, how efficiently you can do that, you know, being prepared for the worst, is a very great skill when it comes to, you know, making stuff. And like, it's something I've learned and embraced myself. Like, you know, you can never expect anything to go perfectly, to go perfect. You know, and learning and being prepared to, you know, fix stuff or remake stuff is a very good mindset to have.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I mean, you put it in the simplest way possible, and I give you credit to that. So,
thank you.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I guess just people just need to just, you know, figure out where they fit in, and they just need to like just go on that journey on their own and just figure out what they need to do the same way you did, because you have to figure it out all on your own, correct?
Oh yeah.
So obviously, the experience is not going to be the same for everyone else. It's going to be different.
Yeah, I mean, obviously talking to other people in the community and, you know, opening yourself up to help with other people is also very important. But, you know, in the end, you're the one making stuff. So just give yourself the patience to learn from other people around you and you know, learn from your mistakes and, you know, give yourself the opportunity to grow.
And is there anything else that you would like to say to that?
No, not really. Check out my Springtrap suit.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
I think by the time this episode airs, I think your Springtrap suit, and you'll probably be on like a fourth other suit by then.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm sure by the time this eventually goes up, Shadow will be in production. So that'll be fun. I'm very excited for that.
Definitely. I will be following your career with great interest. I've already been doing that, but, you know, good to be having, you know, such a wonderful conversation with such an upstanding citizen such as yourself.
It's great to get to talk with you guys. It's, you know, again, it's always fun to be able to talk about the craft. And, you know, a lot of my time is spent just, you know, in my workshop, just working on stuff. So being able to actually talk about stuff in depth is always really fun.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, because I think that's what Safar really wants to showcase, like, is just the normal part of it. It's like, we're always preoccupied doing things and trying to finish things and be on a status quo or a schedule that we don't really get a moment to just sit, breathe, and kind of sit around with, you know, friends and compatriots and just talk. Especially about things that people are genuinely interested about, that want to get insight on how this person operates or how they think. And a lot of times it's the showcase to the world that, like you mentioned, normal people at the end of the day with thought processes that are very much like ours, and we share with a little bit of their own unique insights that we all could learn from. It's genuinely an open book that everybody gets a chance to read and learn. You provided that opportunity for the community, and this provides an opportunity for you to kind of just have that moment of vulnerability and just being able to speak for a moment, as opposed to being stuck on a content schedule as well as being working constantly, because, you know, everyone needs a moment to just take a step back and smell the flowers.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate, again, I really appreciate, you know, being invited to talk with y'all.
And I appreciate you for being here, man. it's a great pleasure. It's an honor. And overall, I look forward to talking to you more in the future. Just getting a judge of your character right here.
Yeah, they'll, in the, I'd say in the next year, there's going to be, I'm working on, again, I've got like 6 projects going on right now, and a good chunk of them will be revealed next year, all secret NDA projects. So there'll be some cool stuff outside of, you know, my own cosplay content, and I'm very excited to show off what I've been doing.
Speaking of projects, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, 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 we're looking forward to it. That's all I got to say.
So is there, so speaking of projects, though, I don't know if you can really answer on this too much, but what future cosplay projects are you most excited about?
Cosplay stuff? I mean, right now, I'm just looking on to the next build, which is Shadow, and I'm very, very excited to do that. But, like, as for, you know, there's been a lot of, like, stuff outside cosplay that I'm kind of pouring my soul and energy into. You know, that I'm very, very excited. And obviously all those things have to do with some degree of, you know, creating things. But like, as for cosplay, yeah, I'm very, very excited for Shadow. Just cause I haven't been able to do a Sonic build in years. And you know, our actor for Shadow will be Izzy. And she's an amazing character actor. So I think it'll be really cool. And I'm very excited to get to bring that character to life.
It's also a perfect time that you're going to be starting on pre-production for Shadow, because I think Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is going to be coming out this December, the 3rd film.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of timed to come out with that, but, you know, I think, yeah, game plan is, you know, probably be done end of December, you know, after the movie comes out, or very early January. So, you know, we'll see.
And yeah, by the time this episode's already out, I'm pretty sure you're already going to have this revealed and everything, I'm sure, after the movie comes out. Who knows?
Awesome.
So yeah,
no. If not, we can always edit it out.
That's true.
I mean, I don't mind.
Power of editing.
So I guess that's it for tonight. That's it for tonight. I think we're done here.
That's all she wrote, folks. I think this is where we could stop the recording and just have an aftermath of just talking without having to worry about recording.
So before we end it off here, I'd like to thank you, the regular Sauce, for joining us on this episode on the Indie Horror Talk podcast, and our guest co-host here, Tony, TJ. Thanks for joining us on here.
Pleasure having
you. Thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Anytime, man. And hopefully we'll have you on again at some point in the future if you're ever down.
I will have a lot more stuff to talk about next year. some very cool, gigantic stuff is in the works that I'm able to talk about. But, you know, there'll be some cool stuff in the future.
And maybe in the future we could do a video podcast so we could be more in depth with you showing off things.
Oh, yeah. I should have some pretty cool stuff to show off.
All right, then. Well, I guess we'll see you all next time in the next episode then, and that's going to be it for tonight.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.